When was the last time you were angry? I mean, really angry. You know, when was the last time you were really angry? Maybe to that point of your veins popping out, your face becoming flush. When was the last time you had one of those moments like that? Maybe it involved an interaction at work. Someone said or did something that was totally out of line. Maybe you're a student and someone said something or did something that disrespected you or made you feel overlooked or embarrassed so that they could feel better about themselves. Perhaps you're part of a family and it was a conversation with a spouse, with a parent, with a child. Maybe it was even getting ready for church this morning, right? Perhaps it was a situation where words were heated, things were said that shouldn't have been said, and now you're having to deal with the outcome. Maybe it was just something that really frustrated you online or in social media. You know, you read this post and you couldn't believe someone actually holds to that view, or you saw the comments that followed and you couldn't actually believe the way some people are interacting on a particular subject, and it just made you angry. It made you frustrated. When was the last time you were really, truly angry? As you think about that situation, how did you respond? Did you handle it well? For some of us, those situations are ongoing. They're situations you're dealing with right now. So how are you handling it? Do you feel justified in your anger? Perhaps because it's been something that was done to you, something beyond your control? As you look at that situation, do you have a game plan for moving forward in a healthy way? I ask you these questions because this morning we're continuing our study in the Sermon on the Mount. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask you to join with me, if you've got a Bible, in turning to Matthew chapter 5. If you don't have one, there should be a Bible in a pew rack in front of you close by. So we're coming back to this Sermon on the Mount, and in the course of this sermon, as you just heard read for you, Jesus deals with the issue of anger. Now, to set the stage for his discussion, let me just remind you what Jesus is doing in this sermon. In so many ways, this sermon is an invitation to thrive. It is an invitation to understand what the good life looks like. When you live as a follower of Jesus, when you start that journey as a disciple, you become part of what Jesus described as the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. And right before he discusses this issue of anger, he argues that those who are part of what I'm doing now have the opportunity to live with a surpassing righteousness, a righteousness that is different than the righteousness of the Pharisees. And here's what he means by that. What is underlying his statement in this sermon is the expectation that when you become my follower, when you become part of what I am doing, you enter into a new relationship with God. And as you pursue that relationship, as you live with Jesus, his Spirit is at work in your lives in transformational ways. So that more and more, your external obedience is actually flowing out of what is going on the inside. So what Jesus does, he begins to cast this vision in verse 20 of chapter 5 for a surpassing righteousness, for a way of living life differently. It's like he looks at you and looks at me and says, look, here's how you think life should work. Here's how you're trying to put the pieces together, but I'm inviting you to live differently. I'm inviting you to a different approach to life as you become part of what I'm doing. So he begins casting that vision of this surpassing righteousness, of what your life and my life can look like. And then he follows that by a series of 6 examples. It's like he says, now that I'm beginning to describe this to you, let me show you what this looks like in concrete ways. And the first example that he gives that was just read for you deals with the issue of anger. So, just for a moment, think about that last time when you were angry. Or think about that ongoing situation in your life right now that it is a source of anger and frustration or disappointment in your life. And as you think about that, let's listen to the words of Jesus. Let's look at what he has to say. What does Jesus say on anger? Well, you notice beginning in verse 21 that he makes reference to the Old Testament, particularly the Ten Commandments. You have heard that it was said to people long ago, you shall not murder, right? That's a major one in the Ten Commandments. You can find that in Exodus 20, Deuteronomy 5. And remember, as he is giving the sermon, he is talking to Jews. He is talking to individuals who, from the time they were very young, have been taught the law. They have been taught the importance of obeying God's law and keeping his commandments. They knew it backwards and forwards. And what he does initially in this paragraph is give what you might call a traditional interpretation of this Old Testament command. When he says, you have heard it said, he is highlighting the way they had been taught the commandments. He's saying, look, this is what you have been taught. This is the way you have heard this text. And it's really a traditional interpretation of the Old Testament law. Now, remember, his criticism of the Pharisees is that their righteousness is simply focused on external behavior. And so here, when he says, you have heard it said, he is acknowledging the fact that as you have heard the Old Testament law, as you have heard this commandment about murder, you have been taught to pay attention to your external behavior. You have been taught to avoid this kind of behavior. And what Jesus is acknowledging is simply this. Many of his contemporaries had been taught to approach the Old Testament commands that way. Pay attention to what Jesus commands. Here are the things you to do. Here are the things you are to avoid, like murder. So work hard at avoiding them. That's kind of a traditional approach to the Old Testament law, a traditional approach to how God works. But after he gives that traditional approach, notice it is immediately followed by a warning, a correction. Verse 22, but I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Now, some of us are very familiar with the words of Jesus, so maybe we just gloss right through this paragraph. But can I suggest to you, if you slow down and actually listen to him, Jesus, he's pushing against this. And I think the natural thing for us to do in so many ways is to push back. Really, is this what you're saying, Jesus? Because notice what he's saying. He said, look, you have heard it said, don't murder. And if you murder, you are subject to judgment. But I tell you, if you get angry with someone else, you are subject to judgment. And then he gives several examples of that, all including judgment. And as you listen to him, it's like he's getting in our face and equating anger and murder. And we want to push back. Jesus, is that really what you're saying? Is that really what you are getting at? I mean, you know what? I know I get angry. Sometimes I lose it with my sons, you know, or get frustrated with a particular situation at work. I realize that. But there's a difference between me getting angry and actually taking a life. Jesus, how can you word this statement this way? I mean, when I read this, I actually think in very personal terms. I think about a friend of mine who went through the horrific experience of having her father murdered in an armed robbery. And I have vivid memories of attending that funeral. Jesus, how can you equate my anger with what that family went through? I don't see what you're getting at here. Clearly, those are very different things. Well, to begin to unpack what Jesus is saying, I think we have to begin by unpacking what he means by anger. The grammatical structure of this statement suggests that when Jesus is talking about anger here, it's more than just kind of a momentary thing. It's something that is lingering. As I put on your outline, it's to be angry in an ongoing way, to hold on to it, to indulge it. It's not just a momentary response, just, you know, a momentary burst of anger. It is something that is present over time. It is something that I hold on to. And I think by implication, it is something that I feel justified in holding on to because of what this other person has done. Now, maybe at this point you would say, I know Jesus is warning us against anger, but weren't there points when he got angry? Right? I mean, we read the gospel stories. We see Jesus overturning tables of money changers and merchants in the temple complex. And that is true. I mean, when the truth of God's plan, when the holiness, the justice of God's plan was threatened, Jesus got angry. And I think, among other things, this means for those of us who are followers of Christ, there are certain things that should make us angry too. But the anger he's describing here is different. It's an anger that flows out of personal relationship. It's not righteous indignation at evil or the good being thwarted. It's the anger of personal animosity. Furthermore, as you look at the examples Jesus gives, it is an anger that leads to contempt. I mean, absolute disgust with someone else. That's what Jesus is getting at, right? You read a little further in verse 22. Again, anyone who says to his brother or sister, raka. Now, that means nothing to us, but it was an ancient term of derision, of insult. And it implies that you have reached a point of contempt and disgust in looking at this other person. When I read that, I think about a scholar. Maybe some of you have come across his work, a guy by the name of John Gottman, famous for his research in marriage and relationships. And one of the things he's famous for is he's interestingly made the argument that if you know what to look for in only a brief matter of time in observing how a couple interacts, you can actually, with a high degree of accuracy, determine whether the marriage will succeed or fail. And when he talks about the things to look for that can destroy marriages and destroy relationships, he highlights four things: criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, and contempt. And that's exactly what Jesus is getting at here, that level of contempt and disgust, that I have allowed the anger to linger within to the point that I'm just really disgusted with this other person. It's indulging it. It's nursing it. It's fueling it. It is allowing it to fester. Now, how do I know if I'm doing that? Well, can I just give you three diagnostic questions as I was thinking about that this week? How do I know if I'm in this cycle of lingering anger that Jesus is describing here? Three questions. First of all, when I look at this person, have I lost sight of their humanity? When I look at this person, have I lost sight of their humanity? That is, you know, I'm so frustrated, I'm so disappointed, I am so disgusted. All I see is what they've done. I can't see past that, I can't see through it. That is all I see. When I think about this person, that is all that comes to mind. And in a real sense, I just view them through contempt because I've lost sight of their humanity. Secondly, when I look at this person, do I have no interest in praying for them and praying for God's best and his work in their lives? Personally, for me, this is always really the litmus test. Because, you know, sometimes you get so frustrated, disappointed, angry with someone, the last thing you want to do is pray for them. And this becomes the hurdle you're going to have to work through. But I have to admit that in my own life, when you're dealing with situations like that, one of the most powerful antidotes to that lingering anger is prayer. I don't know about you, but I find it hard to be angry with someone in the way Jesus describes if I'm also praying for them? Even though I'm frustrated or angry, if I'm pursuing God's best for them and praying for that, maybe praying for a breakthrough, praying that they would look at some situation differently. But the truth is, if I've reached a point where I have no interest in praying for someone, I think that can be a warning sign that contempt has set in. Thirdly, when I look at this person, do I take pleasure when they fail or when they are hurt? Right? So these are just some of the signs that I have allowed anger to develop into contempt in the way Jesus is describing. So notice what Jesus is getting at. Here's what he's saying. He said, look, I know you know the law. You know murder is wrong, and you've been taught to avoid that behavior. But unfortunately, some of you feel like as long as I avoid that behavior, I'm good. It doesn't matter what's going on the inside. You don't have to worry about anger. In fact, you may feel justified in your anger. And the truth is, you may be allowing that anger to go unchecked so that you've reached a point of contempt for this person. But Jesus is saying, I want you to see, anger is simply the last part of the process, or murder is simply the last part of the process. And when you allow anger to go unchecked, it becomes murder-like. That's what he's saying. In other words, if you settle just for this traditional interpretation, right? If you settle just for the idea, I have to avoid certain external behaviors and not worry about the rest, you're not dealing with a root issue. And over time, you may discover that this really is a losing strategy. Because if you simply pay attention to external behavior and don't address internal issues, over time, that anger is going to fester. In fact, interestingly, when the New Testament talks about anger, it's often linked to other things like malice, rage, slander. When left untreated, when left unaddressed, this is what anger does. And Jesus is warning us, when we don't handle this properly, it will lead to a vicious cycle of destruction. So Jesus deals with that kind of traditional interpretation, and then he says, you know what? You need to approach life differently. There's a warning, and it's really an invitation to live differently. And this warning then is followed by application. So you get to the last part of this section of the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus invites us to deal with anger differently, and he shows us what it looks like with two points of application, two simple illustrations that he gives. The first is just an illustration of someone right going to the temple to give a gift, a sacrifice, and on the way there, they realize, you know, there's this person that I need to address, this relationship that needs to be dealt with. And so leave your offering, go deal with the problem, then go back to the temple and give your offering. Then he gives a second illustration. He imagines a scene where a dispute has escalated to the point that it's becoming a legal matter, and he says, go deal with it quickly before the case proceeds. So throughout this section, Jesus is saying, look, this is how you've been taught the law. This is how many of you understand it. But I have come not just to deal with external behavior. I've come to help you live life from the inside out. And when you do that, you're really going to thrive. I have come to help you deal differently with your anger. So if that's what Jesus is saying, what are the implications? Let me just highlight a couple of them for you. First of all, I think one of the things we need to take away from this text is simply this. We need to realize that anger is dangerous. We need to realize that anger is dangerous. I mean, part of the reason that Jesus, right, draws this close connection between murder and anger is to get our attention. Part of the reason that he makes this tight link is to show us how devastating anger can be. And I think what Jesus is saying here is part of a broader biblical pattern if we took time to look at other texts where in different ways the scriptures challenge us to deal with anger effectively. The truth is, it should be a wake-up call to us to not allow anger to linger and take root. In some of my reading, I came across an old quote by Will Rogers, a name some of you will know, who said this: "People who fly into a rage seldom make a good landing." Right? And so, I mean, you know, you listen to Jesus' words and he's pushing and he's challenging and you don't quite get this equation of anger and murder that doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem, you know, to be an accurate, but yet he's pushing us to show us how dangerous anger can be. Furthermore, I think what he shows here is to deal with it effectively, I should deal with it quickly. To deal with it effectively, I should deal with it quickly. Remember, one of his ongoing concerns in this part of the sermon is just, we get comfortable with external behavior. That was his criticism of the Pharisees. We get comfortable with the idea, you know what, I've never hit anyone, I've never taken a life, I'm good, it doesn't matter. And we become complacent about what's going on internally, as if I have nothing to worry about. But Jesus is saying, look, if that's where you draw the line, if you just draw the line at murder, you could be in a vicious cycle of anger working its way into your life and you don't even realize it. It will work havoc in your life and others. And it's like he draws this long timeline, right? And he says, look, the final act is murder. But it's part of the same timeline. It is the ultimate manifestation of anger. But if you just wait until your anger gets here, you're never going to deal with it effectively. If you're not worried about it when you're down here, you're not going to handle it well when you get to here. So to deal with it effectively, I need to deal with it quickly. This is why I think Jesus intentionally gives us, right, one of the application stories is a story about, you know, a situation that is escalating, it's potentially becoming a legal matter, and Jesus intentionally says, look, deal with it quickly, engage this person, don't allow it to proceed, don't allow it to just continue moving, deal with it now. So I think when we take Jesus seriously, we need to understand to deal with it effectively, I should deal with it quickly. But of course, that raises the question then, how do you deal with it? I mean, at some point, all of us deal with these situations. A few moments ago, I asked you, when was the last time you got really angry? And I think for most of us, certain things come to mind. So if I'm supposed to deal with it effectively and deal with it quickly, how do I do that? Well, let me just make a couple of further observations. First, recognize that lingering anger is a sign that there is an attitude to be changed or an action to be taken. Right, throughout this text, Jesus is warning us against lingering anger. And when you see that in your life, understand it's a sign that there is an attitude to be changed or an action to be taken. So first, you know, just think for a moment about attitudes, checking my attitude. I think it's helpful in these situations when we really get angry to say, why am I angry? What's going on here? Now think about it for a moment. In its simplest form, anger is a response to the perception that my will, my desires, my goals have been obstructed, right? Anger is that internal response that says somehow someone is getting in my way. Somehow someone is blocking the way I want my life to unfold in some form or fashion. Somehow my goals, my desires are being obstructed. And what that means is this: anger is always an indication that there is something deeper that isn't being met. So I think when I'm angry, One of the things I need to do is ask why. Where is this coming from? What is the deeper issue at stake? And I think as I do that, I also need to ask, is this a legitimate issue? Because the truth is, sometimes my anger can be driven by deeper issues that really aren't healthy. For instance, anger can be driven by a deep sense of insecurity. Maybe, you know, it's a situation at work where I just feel like, you know what, other people aren't appreciating the work that I do, or my colleagues aren't valuing the contribution that I make to this organization. Maybe it's a situation where I feel threatened, afraid, my self-work is under attack, and that generates anger. But the question is this, as a follower of Christ, is insecurity really the best and most appropriate response to my circumstances? Once again, remember how Jesus starts the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit. That is, blessed are those who realize that they don't have it all together. Blessed are those who understand they can't do this on their own. Blessed are those who invite me into the journey, so that in my relationship with them, they find their new identity, they find their new direction, they find who they are in meaningful and purposeful ways. So the truth is, if I'm expecting everything to always go according to plan, if I'm expecting, you know, people in my family, people I work with to always agree with my decisions or how things are going, that can lead to ongoing experiences of anger fueled by an unhealthy insecurity. Because it's never going to be the case that everyone always likes what we do. As a parent, it's never going to be the case that my sons always agree with the decisions that we make. So insecurity can be something underneath that is actually driving that anger, and it's one of the reasons I need to be aware of where the anger's coming from. I think another attitude that can generate anger is unrealistic expectations of others. I've got to acknowledge, I never really thought I could be an angry person until we had children. Right? And, you know, in this 20-year journey now of being a parent, there have been moments where things have come out of me, where words have come out of me that I never knew existed. I never knew I was capable of that. And one of the things we deal with as parents is always the issue of expectations. And sometimes our anger can be fueled by the unrealistic expectations that we put on our kids. We have three sons, close in age. And one of the things we learned very early on when our kids were smaller was, you know, it's not helpful to our sanity to try to take our three sons out to eat. It's just not worth it, right? I mean, you're in the restaurant and there are multiple trips to the bathroom and their kids crawling under the table and we look at each other and it's kind of like, okay, you go first. You eat, I'll be on guard duty, then we'll switch. It's not a great family time. It's not a wonderful Hallmark moment. It's not. And we reached very early the conclusion that, you know what, we are not going out to eat unless the restaurant has a playland. Of course, that greatly limited our options, and we are wonderfully glad to be out of that phase. But the truth is, if I constantly brought unrealistic expectations to our sons, it would just create an ongoing experience of anger and frustration. So the reality is, when we deal with anger, one of the things we have to wrestle with is, where is this coming from? What's going on underneath? Why am I angry? But the reality is, there are going to be certain situations where we've got to do more than simply check our attitudes. There are going to be situations where, at some level, we have to take action. So with that in mind, what exactly does that look like? I mean, at times we don't simply need to ask, why am I angry? We have to ask, What can I do? What action do I need to take? And just very quickly, let me just highlight a couple of things for you. In those moments, and right, we realize it. There's some situations we know there's something we have to do, some conversation we have to have. And with that in mind, I think one of the things we need to do is be aware of avoidance tendencies. Be aware of how easy it is to avoid these situations and just to kind of let them linger, put them on hold, bracket them as if they're not there. That's why I find it so interesting, this first little illustration Jesus gives, right? At one level, it seems so obnoxious, right? You go to the temple, you offer your sacrifice, but on the way, you realize, I've got something I need to work out with another person. So you leave your, you know, you leave your offering, you go back home, you deal with it, then you go back and finish the sacrifice. At one level, that seems so simple. But put yourself in the place of the people hearing this and understand at one level, this is totally absurd. It's absurd for this reason. Remember geography. Where did you offer the sacrifice? In the temple. That's Jerusalem, right? The middle of Israel. Jesus is giving this sermon where? In Galilee. That's way up here. So the people listening to this sermon are Galileans. People on average who probably only visited Jerusalem once or twice a year. And notice now what this sounds like. Because it's roughly 70 miles from here to here. So you make this once a year 70-mile journey, and when you get there, you realize you've got this issue with another person, so you go back the 70 miles, you get it sorted, and then you come back the 70 miles again, and you finish your offering so that you can go back another 70 miles and go home. That's absurd, right? Why is Jesus telling such an intentionally provocative story? I think he tells the story that way because he's aware of how easy it is for us to avoid situations like this. And the truth is, all of us, we have ways in which we can avoid having the conversations we need to have or addressing the situations that we need to address. And one of the sobering realities of Jesus' illustration is simply this. One of the places we avoid, one of the places we hide, is in church. I think that's one of the reasons Jesus gives us a religiously directed illustration. It's like he's warning us, whether you realize it or not, sometimes we come to church regularly, we involve in the life of the church, we pray, we read our Bibles, and if we're not careful, we can use that as an excuse to not address stuff in our lives we need to address, to not address this relationship where I need to have this conversation. And notice he says, leave your offering and go take care of that other thing. And the scary thing, I think in some of our lives, if we had this conversation with Jesus, he would look us right in the face and say, why are you here week after week? Why do you come week after week, month after month, and you're not dealing with this? Don't you know relating to me affects how you relate to other people? So we need to be aware of the ways in which we can avoid dealing with these kinds of situations. Very quickly then, we need to be aware of avoidance issues. So at times we're going to have to take action. And when we take action, we need to take responsibility for our contribution to the problem. Interestingly, I think Jesus in this paragraph is somewhat vague about the specifics of the examples he's giving. But nonetheless, he still discusses this from the perspective that I've made some contribution to the problem. And that is so often the case in situations of conflict, disagreement, misunderstanding. There's enough blame to go around. But Jesus doesn't address that. It's not like he looks at you and says, okay, you figure out your percentage of the problem. I think what he's saying is, you take responsibility for ways in which you have contributed to the situation. And as you do that, you've got to be willing to take the first step. And at times, this is a hard conversation. A conversation where, hey, can we talk about this? You know, we've gone through this, and help me understand this from your perspective. Help me understand how you see this unfolding. And we seek to address that. We seek to talk through it and to acknowledge how each of us has experienced this. And the truth is, there's no guarantee that having that hard conversation is going to lead to improvement. And so ultimately, we also need to be willing to move on, right? To recognize that to the best of our ability, we have worked at bringing about a healthy resolution, a reconciliation. But there's no guarantee that's happened or will happen. But we've got to be willing to move on and not simply allow the anger to linger. Now, a few moments ago, I asked, when was the last time you really got angry? And for some of you, it's an ongoing situation. It's an ongoing situation in your family, an ongoing situation at work, an ongoing situation at school. And maybe it is a situation where you have gotten comfortable with this traditional approach. That is, as long as your behavior isn't really out of line, you're not really paying attention to what's going on the inside. But Jesus is now inviting you to live differently. Maybe it is a situation where some attitude needs to change or some action needs to be taken. But remember, as Jesus invites you to live this way, he's not asking you to do this on your own. Once again, hear the opening words of this sermon. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed who realize they can't do this on their own. Blessed are those who invite me in. And maybe that's what you need to do right now. Maybe there really is a situation in your life right now where you truly need to invite him in. And say, you know, help me understand where this anger is coming from. Help me understand what's going on inside. And give me guidance and wisdom in the actions that I need to take so that I don't have to be stuck here. So that's really his invitation to you. It's an invitation to live life differently. It's an invitation to invite him in to whatever you're dealing with right now. And it's an invitation that comes with this promise. As you choose to live this way, you will thrive. Let's pray together. Gracious God, we come to this text, and in different ways, all of us can relate to what Jesus is talking about because we've experienced anger in certain situations. For some of us, there have been deeply painful moments that have been part of our life journey and deep hurts that are still at work within us. And Father, the reality is for some of us, this anger is ongoing just because certain life circumstances haven't changed. And perhaps we have settled for simply maintaining a certain external experience and external behavior, as if as long as we do that, we're good. But Jesus is inviting us to think differently and to live differently. And so, Father, I particularly pray for those of us that are dealing with stuff right now, that we would invite you into the process to help us understand what's going on and to help us understand what next steps can look like. May we not hear that invitation as a burden, but as an invitation to thrive. In Jesus' name, amen.
Would you stand and sing with us?